from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. You're going to learn about your gums and how having unhealthy gums can trigger rheumatoid arthritis. You're also going to learn about how senior citizens are just taking way too many unneeded drugs and how higher omega-3 fatty acid intake is tied to lower glaucoma risk and a lot more on health and healing. In fact, we provide more information on health and healing and nutrition and anti-aging than any other radio program in world history. That's why the audience is worldwide. Everybody wants to be healthier. Most people do. And want to live a longer life. And my generation, the baby boomers, oh, we're not going quietly into that long dark night. Not at all. Not with what we know now. And I'm going to be sharing in the new year brand new information on how we can create new stem cells, not from bone marrow, as most people historically have thought, or fetal cell, but rather from plants. In fact, even today, I'm going to show you that all along, foods had a functionality that can be communicated between the food being eaten and the person's RNA. In other words, we weren't meant to eat flesh, but we were meant to eat vegetables and fruits and grains, nuts and seeds, and there's actually a symbiotic relationship with us, with that. It's very exciting. And also, in the new year, I'll be starting a new health support group worldwide. So if you live in South Africa, as listeners do, in India, in just one day we had something like 69 or 67,000 people who were reading just in India. Information up on our website. So we're reaching hundreds of millions of people worldwide who are independent, progressive, and want to live a longer life. We're going to share it with you. Also today, I'm going to introduce you to a board-certified physician, highly respected, who's done above 10,000 hours of research on the safety and efficacy of on vaccines. And you'll hear what she has to say. And then you ask, well, if she's found all this out, what about your pharmacist, your nurse, your scientist, your physician, your pediatrician? Why haven't they done the research? So you'll have that. Also today, as a follow-up to yesterday, this is for Jim. Jim's a friend, a professional friend. And he is standing right at the abyss. And when you're standing at the abyss because you've had a major health crisis, one that can take your life in a split second, what do you do? Do you just follow the advice of your physician, as well-intentioned that physician is? How deep is their knowledge of healing? Or do you try something out of a book, some protocol? Or do you start your life over? Now, one of those is going to save you. The others, not so much. So we've got to get past this whole idea in our society of effort and rewarding people for effort versus results. Because at the end of the day, it's results that mean whether you live or die, improve or not. So I'm going to have some people who made choices. I want you to hear the results of their choices from their own mouth. And then we're going to have, I haven't spoken with him, but he's a board-certified physician who's going to be calling, who came incognito, meaning I didn't know who he was. I don't ask people what they do. I don't ask a thing of anyone at any of the retreats. I'm there to encourage people to liberate their authentic self and to watch the power of that liberated self. And he's observed. So I'll find out when you find out what he observed. It'll be interesting. Then, if time permits, I want to talk about the private prison corporations are more about money, and they're also, it's all about how they can exploit slave labor, because that's what a person who works in prison today is. They're a slave. They're confined. They're paid a wage that no other human being in America would accept. And yet, major corporations are making massive amounts of profit by exploiting that. So most people aren't aware of this. So I'd like you to know more about the corporations that are using prison slave labor. So if you choose, you can boycott those products. Let's begin. The University of California did some research, was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Ophthalmology Journal. And what they found was simple. With one single nutrient, the omega-3 fatty acids, you could lower the odds of glaucoma. Well, glaucoma, macular degeneration, cataract are the three major eye problems we have in our society. And there's nothing you can do medically. You can have cataract surgery, in which case they can put in lenses that won't develop cataract again. But outside of that, with glaucoma, macular degeneration, you can go blind. So just imagine taking in, and I'm going to suggest somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,000 milligrams a day, 1,000 in the morning and 1,000 late afternoon. And by the way, there's brand new research showing that you get a higher absorption of curcumin in the curcuminoids, which are a great anti-inflammatory. I don't care what condition you have, curcumin helps it if you take it at the same time you take your omega-3 fatty acids. So take those two together, omega-3 and curcumin, and you'll get a greater tissue saturation utilization. Also, a lot of people are beginning to exercise, and I'm happy to see that even in gated communities, golf doesn't count. Golf certainly has a skill factor, but it's not really exercise. You need to walk nonstop, because the moment you stop, like in tennis or basketball or football, you break the aerobic capacity. You've got to keep it consistent, maybe 45 minutes nonstop, and then in the middle of that, do an intensive burst as far as you can, then slow it down again. So we have millions, tens of millions of people, over 60 million Americans are power walking each week, which makes it the number one participatory exercise activity in America, more than yoga, more than any other sport. Power walking. But then here is the downside of the medications many of the people are taking, especially if they're using the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories for pain relief. Quote, you can overtax your kidneys and actually reduce muscle recovery times. Now, what's that mean in lay language? It means for the millions of people taking ibuprofen and other over-the-counter medications, that's normal. It's not good, but it's normal for them. Why? Because they want pain relief, and they want it now. And indeed, it will give you pain relief, but it does nothing to correct nothing to correct what was causing the pain in the first place. Same way with aspirin. But when you take an over-the-counter pain medication, you will lower the benefits of exercise. That's according to Stanford University research. So, why not do this? Why not look for natural, non-toxic ways of overcoming pain, healing the area that's impacted, whether it's your joints or muscles, and that way you get the benefit of the exercise and the benefit of some changes. For example, if you were to take cayenne pepper anytime you have pain, it's one of the best pain relievers you have, as is cat's claw, as is black cumin seed oil, though you have to take that in some smoothie because it's a little strong, but it's the best healer there is, as is magnesium at 1,000 milligrams. So you can turn off pain naturally. You don't need the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. Also, Harvard Chan School of Public Health published an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association talking about short-term exposure to low levels of air pollution. So we're not talking about a large amount. In fact, we're talking about the amount that you could find in the air of New York City any day of the week. And New York is not one of the most polluted cities as cities go, but the buildings trap a lot of the heat and a lot of the traffic. The emissions go into the air and that particulate matter then we breathe in. Well, compare that to living where you have sand and dust out west in a lot of communities. And all that fine particulate air pollution at levels well below current national safety standards were linked to higher risk of premature death if you're older. That's right. And the risk was even higher among elderly who were low income, female, or black. So you've got areas of the United States. Let me just give you an example. Down east of Houston, you have the refineries. And those refineries have air pollutants 24/7. Not a single second goes by that it's not polluting the air. And you also have a very, you have a lot of natural background particulate matter. So put the two together, and let's say you're poor, and because of poor people live in that area, and people of color, and the majority of people living there are people of color, and people were too poor to move to a healthier or nicer environment. If you've ever driven the streets, it reminds me of my home state, Appalachia, West Virginia. Nice people, but terribly economically depressed. So there's no money to put into better quality of life structures, more ecological structures. You don't see solar panels. You don't see any of the advantages that people who have the money can spend. So a perfect environment for people who are older, female, and black or Latino to end up dying simply because of what's in the air. So don't take your air for granted. There is a consequence. Also, it's time to retire the entire cholesterol testing myth. Why? Because it's now being challenged, and I'm one of those challenging it, that we have overemphasized cholesterol as a unique and individual risk factor for heart disease, and we shouldn't. Let me share something from Yale University. Quote, today it is estimated that 50% of the American population have cholesterol levels that fall outside of the accepted healthy range. But who defines this range and under what testing protocols? Many medical professionals are starting to question the current standard of care when it comes to statin therapy, as these cholesterol-lowering medications may not benefit patients' populations at all and in fact be harming them. Mainstream medicine has long supported the message that HDL cholesterol is good and LDL cholesterol is bad. However, it remains at the very least an oversimplification. LDL is needed by the body to build new muscle, which is important as we age. LDL can protect the brain as we age, and low levels of it can, quote, escalate problems such as dementia and memory loss. And also with the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol, then we end up with attempts to artificially lower your cholesterol. And that can be dangerous, in part because of serious side effects such as muscle damage, muscle wasting. Consider the finding of Dr. Harlan Krumsholt of the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at Yale University, who reported in 1994 in the Journal of the American Medical Association that old people with low cholesterol died twice as often from a heart attack as did old people with high cholesterol. Supporters of cholesterol campaigns who routinely provide disinformation about LDL cholesterol consistently ignore this observation or consider it as a rare exception produced by chance among a number of studies sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry, which have found the opposite. But it is not an exception. There are now a large number of findings that contradict the lipid hypothesis. To be more specific, most studies on the elderly have shown that high cholesterol is not a risk factor for coronary heart disease at all. On the Medline database, many studies address that question. Specifically, high cholesterol may protect against infections and atherosclerosis. Dozens of studies have found that high cholesterol does not predict or cause death. Now, consider that more than 90% of all cardiovascular disease is seen in people above the age of 60. Also, that almost all studies have found that high cholesterol is not a risk factor for women. This means that high cholesterol is only a risk factor for less than 5% of those who die from a heart attack. The next time you go in for a medical checkup, your doctor will probably make a mistake that could endanger your life. That's according to Dr. Alan Snyderman at McGill University. He is a cardiologist. Most physicians order what he considers the wrong test to gauge heart disease risk, the standard cholesterol readout, which may indicate levels of low-density lipoprotein or non-high-density lipoproteins cholesterol. What they should request instead, Snyderman argues, is an inexpensive assay from a blood protein known as APOB, that stands for apolipoprotein. Now, apolipoprotein indicates the number of cholesterol-laden particles in circulation in the blood. That's a better indicator of imbalances within proteins of the body than absolute cholesterol levels. And Snyderman asserts that routine tests like this, which he says cost as little as $20, would spare millions from unnecessary treatment. Now, I would add my own thoughts on this. I believe that you can have a healthy body and a healthy heart even with elevated cholesterol, not excessively elevated, but in the 200 range, and you could be a strict vegan and be emaciated with very low cholesterol. You should be measuring, for example, your overall immune response. You should be measuring C-reactive protein, homocysteine, fibrinogen. Those three and are better indicators of whether or not you're likely to have a heart attack than your cholesterol. Because if they're elevated, that's a bad thing. You don't want them elevated because you get a high C-reactive protein. It's a silent killer. So, something to consider. And also, the statin drugs are deadly. I'm going to do an article in the next month. In fact, I have three articles I'm writing for to release shortly that look at the honest history of statins and the lack of scientific support that they're saving people's lives. So, hopefully people pay attention to that. University of Manchester did a study on tomatoes, and they believe that tomatoes may combat the damaging effects of radiation. A team of researchers have discovered that lycopene, that's the red pigment in tomatoes, is extremely successful at guarding against the harmful effects of radiation. A Dr. Ruth Edge from the University of Manchester, together with her colleagues, Professor George Truscott of Kiel University and Professor Fritz Boehm from Berlin, undertook a study of lycopene, that's one of the carotenoids, by the way, and plant pigments found in many fruits and vegetables, and its effectiveness at protecting against radiation. And they did this also as part of the Dalton Nuclear Institute. And radiation therapy is used to treat a wide range of tumors. It can cause tumors to shrink, absolutely, but it's also a cause of cancer. It causes the very worst of the free radicals, and these hydroxyl free radicals can stay longer in the body. So on the one hand, you have something that's shrinking a tumor, Everyone says, hooray. But chemotherapy can do the same thing. Then what happens is you've destroyed the body's immune system, and then a year, 2 years later, cancer returns, and you don't have the immune system to fight it. So it's a double-edged sword. I'm not suggesting there's not some uses for it. There certainly is. But it shouldn't be a routine part of a lot of cancer treatments, and it is. Anyhow, they want to see the damaging effects of gamma radiation and what dietary intervention could do that would help people with the side effects. And a plentiful supply of tomatoes helps the body to absorb carotenoids. In fact, if you want the most efficiently absorbed carotenoids, tomato sauce. In point of fact, slow-cooking tomatoes increases the amount of lycopene the body can get. And that's terrific. That's why the Mediterranean diet and other diets using tomatoes are so important. And a major finding of the study is that such protective effects are reduced by oxygen concentration when oxygen concentration is increased. So the takeaway message is tomatoes, if you're taking radiation, red raspberries, also red peppers, sweet peppers, and watermelon. Those are all terrific. And I've suggested people I counsel who are getting radiation therapy to make them a red smoothie each morning, putting a full pint of red raspberries, a pint of pomegranates, also red cherries, and watermelon, and blend that all up with some vitamin C and quercetin and vitamin D. Then you take that, 16 ounces, and then you get your radiation. It's very protective, helps you. In fact, just to put a dot on this, according to Medical Express, there are 6 new studies pointing to red raspberries' potential for anti-inflammatory properties. Now, there's just a flurry of new research on red raspberries, and it's going to be given at the Experimental Biology Conference, and it was also published in the Advances in Nutrition, a comprehensive review of the scientific literature on the role of red raspberries in helping to reduce the risk of metabolic-based chronic disease. That's cardiovascular disease, diabetes mellitus, obesity, and Alzheimer's, all of which share critical metabolic, oxidative, and inflammatory links. Quote, the new research being presented at Experimental Biology contributes to the growing body of nutrition research around the potential role of red raspberries in helping to reduce the risk factors associated with metabolically based chronic disease. And there's a whole lot of important nutrients, vitamin C and fiber, all kinds of great things in red raspberries. So make and anthocyanins are also in there as well. So get your red raspberries. Helps with heart conditions, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, liver function, inflammation, even bone health. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about walnuts and why they're so good for you. And tomorrow I'll get into a cancer, or can skin cancer be helped with one single vitamin? And also, I was asked on a flight where I'm out filming, what's bee propolis? And so I'm going to answer that and all the wonderful things it does, and I'll bet you'll think, wow, that's worth keeping in my emergency medical chest in my home or apartment, or taking it with me when I travel, because you have no idea how powerful bee propolis is and why it's so important for us. But that's all for tomorrow. Right now, we're going to take a brief break and come right back and go right into hearing a medical doctor, Dr. Sherry Timpany, talk about the safety and efficacy of vaccines.
thought this is the most interesting thing of all the articles you sent me. France only has right now 3 mandatory vaccines, and they want to increase that to 11, which is a drastic contrast to what we see here in the United States.
Well, not really. I mean, it's not a drastic contrast. It's about the same. I mean, even though they're doing it on a countrywide basis, and of course here in the U.S., we're doing things on a statewide basis because vaccination and vaccination laws are directed by states, and it's not as of yet at a national level. And so we have the good fortune of having 50 states that we have to work through that system. But at any given time, as you know, they could ratchet this up to the federal level and make a federal mandate the same way that Italy, France, Belarus, Romania, those countries, and Germany, those countries already have.
Yeah, we've seen a lady here in the United States get put in jail for not wanting to vaccinate her son. And then the father went and took the boy to get vaccinated. But Belarus, authorities might introduce legal punishments for vaccine noncompliance. And, you know, something you've been harping at for a long time, vaccines for adults, mandatory vaccines for adults are coming down the pike. So where do you want to pick up with all this?
Any of it, and all of it is important. I think the thing that most people forget about and they don't really talk about is the problems with vaccination with adults. And that we put a lot of focus on the kids, and because we've got all these vaccines for schools and how the states lie to people. Like here in the state of Ohio, we have a philosophical exemption, but yet every fall, all the parents get letters saying you must have these vaccines in terms of school requirements, which they aren't, which they never tell the parents that these are the recommended vaccines, but you have a right to refuse them through your philosophical exemption. And there's 18 states that have that. I mean, there's 47 states that have a religious exemption. So a lot of discussion and a lot of conversation is always around the kids and about autism and about kids in school and college requirements. We forget how many vaccines are being pumped up for the adult schedule and how many adults are actually in the VAERS database that have injuries and that have become completely disabled, even died from the adult vaccines.
Yeah, that is true. And you've seen the reports of people. And what I'm finding in my research is most of this is centered around the flu shot, which the propaganda kicks into high gear around late August, early September. And you see every drugstore offering a flu shot. You see grocery stores even offering 10% off to get your flu shot, anything to get that flu shot. And what they don't report is the adverse reactions that happen. And from last year, 2015 and 2016, the increase went up over 1,000% in payouts to those injuries, which doesn't even count the actual number of injuries that have happened.
Exactly. And I went back through the CDC's data. You know, every year they have 120 or so testing centers around the U.S. So if you end up with flu-like symptoms, fever, cough, body aches, and you go into one of these testing centers, they take a throat and a nasal swab, and they send it to the CDC to be tested to see whether or not the pathogen that's making you sick is actually the influenza virus, because the influenza vaccine is only there ostensibly to protect you from getting sick from the influenza virus. Or is it some other of like the 20 some other pathogens that can give you the same types of symptoms? Well, I went back through the annualized data of the CDC. I went back 19 years. And over the last 19 years, the flu shot would fail 85% of the time, because 85% of that time, those swabs are some other pathogen besides influenza. So when we hear that the flu shot doesn't work very well this year, but get it anyways, well, the flu shot doesn't work very well any year. And so we should never be getting the flu shot. We should keep our vitamin D level up somewhere between 80 and 100. Everybody should have that tested. They should keep their vitamin C level high. You know, wash your hands, get to bed on time, stop eating all the white sugar, all the things that keep you from getting sick. The flu shot just isn't it.
And in fact, even from the government sources, they're only saying the flu vaccine is 10% effective against the dominant strain of virus circulating this year. So, and that's from the Mercury News.
When you look at that data though, Rob, and you go all the way back 19 years, the people get sick. And when they get tested, what's making them sick is the influenza virus only 15% of the time, which means over the last 19 years, the flu shot has failed to keep people from getting sick 85% of the time.
And yet they push it and push it and push it. And why don't they want to shoot straight with us? Why does the health community insistent on pushing these on people? And now it's even gone up. Oh, now we got to give them to pregnant women. And they try to hide the studies where they say, oh, women who are getting the flu shot are having stillbirths. I mean, go into that.
Yeah, I don't know what the, you know, I've often wondered, you know, what else is in there? I mean, we know what's on the package, what's on the package insert. We know that the multi-dose flu shots still have full doses of mercury. We know that there's stray viruses in there that under certain conditions can activate genes that can lead to breast cancer. We know all these things. I've written about it for years. I've written a lot of papers about it. But I've often wondered what else is in there that they are just so determined that everyone should have this from six-month-old babies every year for the rest of their life. What you mentioned about flu shots and pregnant women, it's not just flu shots that they're now pushing on pregnant women. It's the DTaP vaccine, the pertussis vaccine that they want women to get it with every single pregnancy, even though the data shows that all of these people getting these teen and adult pertussis vaccines are actually becoming chronic carriers of the pertussis bacterium, and they're spreading it all over the neighborhood. They're actually making those little tiny babies more susceptible after they've had that adult vaccine. They're pushing the adult pneumonia shot. There was a study that came out about 4 months ago that showed that the pneumonia shot, which has 23 strains of strep in it, so it's like getting 23 vaccines in one single needle, more than half of them never even develop an antibody. And it's the first time they've ever tested it, even though we've been using the pneumonia shot since about the 1940s, and tetanus shots, and now the shingles vaccine. And so all of these things are ramping up against senior citizens. In fact, I just wrote an article, a little commentary today, that there was an article that came out that said that the annual wellness visit for Medicare patients has become the single biggest opportunity to vaccinate for flu shots and pneumonia shots. And the senior citizens, which are people in Medicare, 65 years of age and older, are the group of people that grew up on Marcus Welby and Ben Casey and Medical Center and General Hospital and all of these things. And they grew up saying, doctor knows best, and you got to trust your doctor. And so they are easily swayed into getting one of these vaccines, even if they've had a personal adverse event, or perhaps they've seen one of their children or grandchildren get horribly sick from one of these shots. And so Medicare, with their annual visit that Medicare will pay for,
we're going to have more of her discussion tomorrow. She just warned you about the flu vaccine not being effective. It's one of the biggest scams, and they try to scare people by saying 36,000 people a year die from the flu. No, they don't. They die from pneumonia, not from flu. Big difference. Only hundreds to 1,000 or so out of a country of 330 million. It's not statistically significant, but more people will die from taking the flu vaccine, and that's what they don't tell you. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break, come back, and go right into hearing some people who decided that they would commit themselves 100% to changing everything in their life they had to change. And you'll hear the results, because some of them were literally at death's door. Back in a moment.
And I have just finished a two-week stay at Gary's retreat, and I can't really say what this has meant to me because I don't even know yet, but I know that it's totally turned my life around. It's been the most incredible experience of my life for a lot of reasons. I came down here as a stage 4 cancer patient, ready to go into hospice, and I'm walking out of here, literally walking without a cane, without anything to help me, and feeling better than I felt in a year, 3 years. And I'm so grateful, so incredibly grateful that I've had this time to reevaluate a lot of things in my life. I literally was unable to walk without some type of aid when I came here. And within 3 days, I'd put the cane down and I was walking and sort of power walking, nothing like what they do down here, but I was doing it in the best way that I could. So I cannot say enough, and I don't even expect people to believe what I'm saying because it seems so phenomenal that I would have a breast tumor that would go down almost two-thirds while I'm here because of the attention, because of the energy, because of everything here. I go home a different person, literally go home a different person. So I can only say thank you to everyone here, to all the people that have played a role in this. I sort of came here against my better judgment, not believing that anything could really make that much of a difference. And knowing that if I had 2 months left to live, that at least maybe Gary Null could help me make the best of those 2 months. And I go back fully charged and ready to go to work and continue where I left off 3 years ago. I was a registered nurse for 40 years. And one of the things that I did was I was a certified chemo nurse, chemotherapy nurse, and worked a lot in heart, lung, liver, kidney transplant. But my belief in chemotherapy was that all my patients that had had chemotherapy were dead, and I was not going to take it. So I went it the natural route. I had three breast tumors initially 3 years ago that metastasized into bone cancer, liver cancer, and spinal cancer. And at this point, I don't feel that there is any pain there like I was having. I was having excruciating bone pain for which I was taking narcotics for. And now that is gone. And so I am just blessed to have been given this opportunity and every person here that has made this happen. I only wish I could make it happen for other people so they can benefit from this also.
Were you diagnosed with end-stage multiple sclerosis?
Yes, I was diagnosed with MS 23 years ago.
23 years. Mm-hmm. And it's progressively gotten worse.
It's got worse in the last 13 years.
Okay. In the last 13 years, were you given any hope that somehow this would slow down or improve or you get better?
No.
All right.
I was told by my neurologist some years ago, when he saw me walking with a crutch, he says, "You're still walking, you'll soon be on a wheelchair." And I'm still, for the last 8 years, I'm still walking with my walker.
Okay. When you came here, coming from an Orthodox family background of all doctors, were you able to bend your knees?
No. I couldn't bend my knees when I walked in here.
How long had your knees been frozen stiff?
It's been like this for about 5 years now.
5 years. Mm-hmm. When you went from your room to the dining room, which is about 200 feet, did you have to have Charles lift up and put down each foot, right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot?
That's right, that's right. That's what we did the first day when I got here. And he had to help me, and I was very excited to have somebody around to help me for the few time they were going to be here.
When you were walking with the crutch, the walker, and Charles lifting and putting down
that's
your feet.
That's right, that's right.
And your cousin assisting you on the side.
That's it.
How many times did you have to stop in that walk?
Oh, many, many times I had to stop. I can't remember exactly how many times, but Shane, it was very sweet of him to make sure there was a chair for me to sit down because I was so weak on my legs.
Okay. Now it's 3 weeks have passed. Yesterday, in front of everyone, did you by yourself, with no assistance, stand up out of your chair?
Yes, that's right.
And with no cane or walker, were you able to lift your knees up and down in the air?
That's right. That's correct.
Were you able to take some steps unassisted, no cane or walker, towards me?
That's right. That's exactly what I did.
So you came without being able to move a leg, with no knee movement at all. You couldn't raise a foot. Your feet were swollen. Are your feet swollen?
That's right. But I've been having this swollen legs for many, many months now back in South Africa. And since I've come here, I don't have any swelling.
You also had bowel problems. Do you have bowel problems now?
No, I don't have it at all.
Okay.
Oh, I had bowel movements from home, but it's done so much good for me with all the right, correct food that I've been eating here.
Did you think you would ever be able to stand alone and take a step?
No, I didn't think I would be able to do that.
Did anyone in the medical community say that it was possible?
No.
How are you going to approach your doctors? And right beside you, you have a physician who saw this. You also had a physician, an oncologist from Pittsburgh, one of America's foremost oncologists
who was here.
That's
right.
She sat with people who had terminal cancer.
Yes.
And who were making improvements.
Yes.
What did she say? Because you two were speaking.
Well, when I spoke to her, when she was here, I told her about my illness. But when she got the news that I'm doing so well since she last had seen me, she was very excited and happy for me.
Do you believe that your medical community will pay attention to what you've done when you go home and you're the only person that I know of who's had end-stage multiple sclerosis that could actually regain their ability to stand unassisted and walk?
I think they're all going to be surprised and shocked and excited for me because they're all good friends of my late husband who I lost 6 months ago. So they'll be very excited to see that I had this progress.
How do you feel today?
I'm very pleased with myself. I'm glad that I met a person like Gary who's given me a lot of encouragement on my health. And I hope in the future I'd like to come back to his next retreat to see if I can have much more improvement than what I have now.
Remember, you're the one who made the improvement.
Yes.
Never give that power to anyone else or mm-hmm. credit mm-hmm. because you're the one who had to make the change.
That's right. That's true.
Have you seen other people change?
Yes, I did quite a few others change as well. Not in my illness, but other illnesses that have been taking place here. I've seen others who have improved their quality of life as well.
And yet, when you arrived, I said, I'm not a doctor. I'm not here to diagnose or treat anyone. We're here to focus upon the exchange of negative energy for positive energy. Do you understand what that means now?
I do.
Good. Well, we wish you all the best when you go back to South Africa.
I'd like to thank Gary, and I'd like to thank Luann as well, they've been so kind to me, and of course the group of friends that I've had met here, giving me excellent treatment out here. It's been like being at home in South Africa. I've been here for 3 weeks, and I've had an excellent stay out here. Thank you. Bye.
Hello. I'm KB, and I cannot put into words the amazing and wonderful experience here at Gary Knowles Retreat. I came here physically debilitated and today I feel 90% better. I'm able to do what I could not do before. I have participated in a race that I never imagined I would have been able to take part in. I would have never had the courage had I not come. I've learned so much, and now I want to be a viable part of my community as a result of the information I've gotten here. This is better than any vacation I could have ever taken anywhere in the world, and I've traveled the world. Now I know that life is about living, and I've learned how to do so here at this retreat. Thank you.
My husband asked me to say some things about his experiences here at the retreat this week. He wants to tell you that 5 years ago he was afflicted with a very devastating disease, and he hung up his tennis racket and his running shoes. Sorry. Last year, he was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and when we arrived at the retreat, he really felt that he could hardly do the first day, one lap plus three laps on the running track. But during the course of this week, he's gone from that to doing 18 laps today without trouble, and he's played tennis twice. And he's never felt better in his life or in 5 years. It's been a magic bullet, though he didn't think there was a magic bullet.
My name is Carol. I'm on my first retreat, and I came because of a very serious health challenge that I am facing. And I am not the kind of person that gives up. I was very close, I think, to I don't want to say giving up, but not really knowing a direction that I thought could help me. And I have found a tremendous amount of help right here. I came here not believing that I could walk a mile and a half, and now I know that I can walk much more than that. I know that I will get off this oxygen. In fact, I've been off of it for the last couple of days. I was unable to climb stairs at a reasonable pace, and now I can climb stairs normally and get there without getting short of breath. Let's see what else is different. Gary did some energy work on me the other day, and I discovered that I could not follow his meditative direction. I could not make the light go through me. However, in spite of that, the pain in my right side that I used to describe myself as being the old shoe that was given to the teething puppy, because I felt like I was just being chewed up and torn apart. There's no more biting. I still have pain, but that horrible pain is gone and has been since he did that work. And I will be eternally grateful for that. It makes me want to go on. And I made a list of things that I'm going to take with me to implement from this retreat. One, of course, is daily exercise. Number two is minimization of the psychobabble that comes from my TV. The dietary changes and adventures that I'm looking forward to with my gluten-free vegan diet. I will not hold my tongue as much as I have in the past. I'm not going to pick up other people's crosses, but I will offer more empathy to those who are in pain. And the last thing, but the most important thing, is that I'm going to treat myself as the goddess that I am. Thank you.
Just a handful of individuals. So, Jim, here's the message. As you look into the abyss, orthodoxy will offer you one approach, and your spirit will offer you a different one. There is a limitation to the existing medical model, even though it's exemplary in emergency medicine, and for everyone. We haven't been trained, conditioned, to understand how much power we have within ourselves. We should. Let's now say hello to a board-certified physician who witnessed this. Dr. Steve, we'll just call him Dr. Steve. Nice to have you with us today, Steve.
Hi, Gary.
Anything that you heard, do you remember any of those people?
I do remember certainly some of them. The woman who was in a wheelchair and unable to walk. End stage. All her doctors. In fact, her family was made up of doctors. They all wrote her off and said she was going to be in a wheelchair the rest of her life. And slowly she started to be able to walk with a walker, then walk with a walker upstairs. And the last day, and several people videotaped it, including me, she actually took steps on her own, which is unheard of.
Her husband was Nelson Mandela's physician. They were friends. They lived across the street from each other. Were you there when the woman Joyce was there?
I wasn't there for that retreat.
All right. Interesting, because she came because she had a massive tumor on her breast, under her arm, that you could see. I mean, these were the size of oranges, and one on her knee. And the one on her knee kept her in such pain 24/7 that she asked me, is there anything that might help to reduce the pain? She accepted she was going to die, but she was going into hospice care, taking morphine, And she didn't want to take the morphine because she wanted some consciousness. So I said, let's see what we can do. And within a week, she was out of all pain. And then there was the board-certified oncologist who just happened to have been there and from Pittsburgh. And there were four other physicians who were just there as guests. And I asked them, would you palpate the tumors? And on the last day, they could find none. She went home, by the way, and she went back to the hospital where she had worked all those decades as an oncology nurse. And they did a full medical exam, could find no cancer in her body. They didn't know why that happened, but it did. So too bad you didn't see that one. We have photographs now I'm putting up of her dancing in the gym. She came in a wheelchair. She couldn't hold her head up. The last woman you heard, her name is Carol. She's a lawyer, and she had end-stage emphysema. She couldn't walk, couldn't breathe, massive amounts of mucus. And the last 3 or 4 days, she was walking 3 miles without her oxygen. She lost, I guess, about 25 pounds and a whole new lease on life. From an orthodox medical point of view, how do you describe these phenomena? These are just minor. You've heard hundreds of even more radical sounding than these. You've been there. You've seen them. Why do you keep coming back? What's your motive? What's your agenda?
Well, you know, I come from a background in medical school where we isolate diseases and isolate organ systems, and that's just the way we're trained. Even as a young doctor, I thought that I was doing a lot of great work. And then it was more I've been doing this for over 25 years. And in the last several years, I realized there was something missing. And then even at the retreat, when people go to the retreat, they might be surprised that you don't talk about diseases and you don't talk about cures and organ systems and anything like that. It's all something different. And that's what I still don't fully understand it, but I'm learning more and more each time. And for instance, you're not going to just throw some supplements at somebody and think they're going to get better. There's something special that happens at the retreat. You do a more holistic overall kind of a restart, a reboot of someone's life where they're in a beautiful environment and they're with animals and they're just kind of shedding and detoxifying their former life. And it's something that's completely different than what I've been trained in.
You are aware that every single retreat we have physicians coming, some out of curiosity, rarely for themselves. And at the end, they're clueless of what they experienced or what other people said. Have you experienced that?
Yes.
I mean, they see it. They hear people getting up and making these phenomenal statements. And I won't even go into this. And as you know, I do not tell people what happens, what I do. I work on energy, different completely. And they keep wanting a reductionistic model. Have you ever once heard me give someone a diet or supplements or talk about disease, even once?
No.
Never.
Never.
Because that's not where healing originates. And that's why the orthodox model that you're a part of, but now looking to transcend or transition out of, that's why they don't have these results. And they can't. Because their mindset is wrong. And unfortunately, the patient that adheres to that, then follows the doctor right into the abyss. But the doctor doesn't go into the abyss. The patient does. The doctor just opens the door and says, take the next step. Trust in us. Do you remember Emily Dickinson? She wrote something people may, I'm sure the people who appreciate literature will remember. It's, hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all. It's a different paradigm. Steve, are you coming to the one in April?
I sure hope to.
It's probably going to be the last one because I got a whole lot of other ideas coming for the future. We're doing it as a fundraiser for our sister station WBAI and some nice people. And I'm sure that we will have an agent provocateur, but we'll catch them and we'll send them home as we always do before they do too much damage impacting people in a negative way, which is their intent. For the people who want to come with the right intent, with the right energy, to experience a deeper, more profound and intimate sense of the authentic self, yeah, that's where the journey, the real journey, happens. And that's the only reason that those people had the experiences and sustained those experiences that they did. Steve, thank you for getting on and giving us your perspective. How many retreats have you been to?
Six, seven. I don't know.
Six, eight, seven. Okay. Yeah. Well, sooner or later, you might understand what's going on there. Hopefully you will. I look forward to seeing you there if you do come. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. We're going to make one quick mention of this. If you want to join the first week or second week of April, it's a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI. And I make no promises of curing anybody, irrespective of what you've heard. I never mention that word. Instead, I focus upon helping people understand their life from a different perspective, much deeper, much more philosophical, much more spiritual. But you're going to be happy eating food that's gourmet and vegan, and a great group of people come together. They're all highly successful in their own lives, and the reason they come together to help you is because they're giving something back, because they've all benefited. I'm going to give you a number to call. Is Luann on the line? I don't think she is. You can call her if you want to join us, but call her at 973. Let me see. I had two numbers for her, and I don't. Oh yeah. Let me see which number you got to call her on. Call Luann at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.